1,089 days since Northern Ireland last had a government, and more than £13 million sterling paid in MLA salaries since that date. But today, it's expected, though not quite certain, that a proposed deal published by the Irish and British governments last night will be accepted by the five main parties in the North. On the line now, Ben Lowry, deputy editor of the Belfast Newsletter, Alison Morris, columnist with the Irish News, and Jim Wells, DUP MLA for South Down. Thank you all for coming on the programme. Ben Lowry, to you first. What do you make of these proposals in the round?
Well, it's a bit of a mishmash of a deal. I mean, it's taking everybody a long time to absorb, and it's taking the parties a long time to absorb. But I think that the key things are, it's introducing stuff like health and health reform, which is a very unusual thing, and a particularly unusual thing for the Irish government to be at the helm of in terms of strands. But I think the key things that people will be looking out for, that everybody has known about, has been watching, is whether or not there's an Irish Language Act. The DUP is saying it isn't an Irish Language Act, but Sinn Féin will be pointing out that it is an Irish Language Commissioner, which is the most significant element of an act. And the reform of petition of concern, this is this thing, that this procedure to ensure that minorities are protected. It hasn't really been reformed significantly or radically or referred to an outside body. So that will be something that the DUP is pleased about, because it was worried about radical reform of petition of concern. Legacy, there's a very interesting thing that has been kind of a little bit missed in this, which is a commitment by the British government to bring forward the Stormont House legacy structures within 100 days, although there's talk about reform of those. That's a very big change. And then the other big thing in this, and I think that this would be, you would think, should be a big problem for unionists. As a unionist paper, it's something that we've been very concerned about, is the ability to bring the sustainability of the structures, the ability of anybody to bring it down again, which, of course, is what Sinn Féin did in 2017. They say that was because of RHI. They say that was because they couldn't work with the lack of respect of Arlene Foster. But putting aside the rights and wrongs on that, which could take three shows in itself to debate, there's not really anything in this. I mean, there's a cooling off mechanism, and there's a keeping ministers in place and so on, and a delay before a Secretary of State has to call an election if this happens again. But looking at this from the perspective of unionists who are concerned about Sinn Féin having been able to bring it down when Sinn Féin ultimately don't want Northern Ireland to exist, there's no big reform there. And then you get into all sorts of other details. But it is, as I said at the beginning, a mishmash.
Is your paper supporting it?
We will be very concerned about some of the things that we thought needed to be. The short answer is, like the parties, we're examining it, but we are immediately concerned and alarmed about the things that we thought needed to happen, which was that no party would be able to bring this down. We've always said that a unionist party would never be allowed morally to bring it down. There would be international uproar. Irish America would get involved. The US Congress would get involved. If unionists had dared to bring down Stormont in 2015, after the paramilitary report. So, unionists can't be allowed to bring it down. That's what everybody agrees. But what we would say is, why are Republicans allowed to bring it down? And why has this not been addressed in this document?
Okay, to turn to you, Alison Morris, a columnist with the Irish News. No Irish Language Act standalone, but there is to be an Irish Language Commissioner, and also, I suppose, by way of balance, what Arlene Foster described as an Ulster British Commissioner to look at ways to strengthen the place of Northern Ireland in the UK.
Yeah, there's a lot of commissioners involved in this. There's also a veterans commissioner as well involved in this deal. So there'll be plenty of highly paid employment coming out of it if it does go through. The issue with the Irish language has been such a tricky one. You know, Sinn Féin put it down as a red line, as a standalone act. This isn't a standalone act at all. There's a lot of strands to it, but the commissioner, which the DUP were completely opposed to, the fact that you get a commissioner, but the commissioner doesn't have overall independence. The commissioner's answerable to the executive office and to the First and Deputy First Minister. That will probably cause concerns among Irish language speakers. But if you take those cultural issues, you know, those things that Northern Ireland, you know, that we live and die on, you know, the things that don't actually put food on the table, but that we have obsessed about for many years, if you take those out of it, it's a good deal for health, it's a good deal for education. There's provision in there for educational underachievement, particularly in young Protestant boys who score very badly. in terms of educational achievement. The nurses' strike, which has brought the has been crippling for the health service. There's provision for pay parity, which will end that. And these are the things that, if you take it away from social media, which, you know, can be a very false impression of what's going on, if you were to go out and stand at the school gates or in offices or anywhere else, it's those sort of big-ticket health and education and public service issues that people are really angry about. And I think that the politicians, and particularly Sinn Féin and the DUP, know that if they either of them rejected this deal, if they then had to go to an election, which is what will happen, then they will have to explain on the doors why they've turned down extra money for the health service, why they've turned down a provision for the training of additional nurses, why they've turned down additional money for the PSNA and additional officers, why they've turned down money for schools. And I don't think that any of them want to go out and have to start explaining that to their electorate and then try and explain it in terms of, well, you know, an Irish Language Act. I mean, I think that that would be a big mistake for both of them. So at this point in time, I would say that this deal is going to pass. It's going to pass probably reluctantly. There's no big winners, but on the whole, if you were to take it in its different parts and you know, add them all up at either side of a chalkboard, unionism, I think, managed to negotiate a better deal than nationalism did.
And do you expect the Assembly to reconvene today, or might we maybe wait until tomorrow or perhaps even Monday?
I think it's probably looking more likely Monday than today, because all of the five main parties, they're meeting today to discuss this. I know that from Sinn Féin's perspective, that there's a meeting this morning and then their deciding body, their ruling body, will meet this afternoon and decide whether to give to back the deal on the basis of what advice they receive. That, I think, will probably take us until late afternoon. We could well get the Speaker called to reconvene the Assembly later on this afternoon, but for like a full day sitting and let's get down to business, I think that's probably going to start fresh on Monday morning.
Jim Wells, good morning to you. You, as I say, are a DUP MLA for South Down. What do you make of this package as proposed by the two governments?
Well, I find myself in a very worrying position, that I think I agree with every word that Alison Morrison said, and that's a first. I think she has summed up very well, actually, where we stand. The DUP MLA group and the DUP MPs at Westminster have met and, after a huge degree of discussion, have agreed to give this deal a fair wind. We haven't got all of what we want, but equally we see it as a way forward in terms of getting devolution back and dealing with the real life issues, as Alison and I forgot his name, your other correspondent,
Ben Lowry.
The people are concerned about, and I don't think the public have got the stomach for another election. I think they want us to get back and deal with things like the huge number of vacancies in our health service, 7,000, the crisis in education, and so many other issues. And I think that the message from the last election was very clear. It would be a plague in both of your houses if you don't go back and tackle these issues immediately. Now, there will be some pain for the DUP here, but I think on balance, Arlene Foster's called this right, and I think she will have her party behind her in rolling out these proposals.
Yes, and just where the Irish language is concerned, there is going to be this Irish language commissioner, balanced, as I say, in Arlene Foster's language by an Ulster British commissioner. But the guidance that the Irish language commissioner will, as a first priority, be focusing on will be developing best practice standards, facilitating interaction between Irish language users and public bodies, including but not limited to making information or forms available in Irish where required, enabling widely used public websites to have an Irish language translation available, ensuring public bodies reply in Irish where practical to correspondence in Irish, and public bodies will each continue to make their own decisions on other matters to do with the Irish language. But then the caveat, I suppose, best practice standards recommended by the Commissioner and all subsequent changes will be put for approval to the First Minister and Deputy First Minister. So does that effectively give the DUP a veto on whatever happens in regard to the Irish language?
No, obviously, if the Commissioner was to come up with some bizarre proposals, which are going to be very expensive, there has to be some mechanism to prevent that happening. But I think the DUP will be reasonable in this. We have no problem with people who have an affinity and a love for the Irish language practicing that and going out there and encouraging others to learn the language. What we are opposed to is the weaponization of the language in the way that some Sinn Féin activists have used it to further their cause. So therefore, I think you'll find that having agreed the commissioner position, that the DUP will be reasonable. And we hope that eventually when the executive and the assembly settles down and gets on with the real work, that trust will begin to break out again. But the Sinn Féin had made this a very clear red line that they had to have some movement on the Irish language. I think unionism has gone as far as it can on this occasion to meet those concerns. And I think once we get past this distraction, we then concentrate on the issues that are affecting people like the 400,000 people in Northern Ireland who are waiting more than a year for a first consultation for a health condition, or the £900 million shortfall we have in our education budget. Those are the issues I think we have to get back and deal with. And as Alison quite rightly said, if the two parties had rejected, the two main parties had rejected that, I think they would have reaped a very bitter revenge at the next election, and I think that has concentrated minds greatly.
Ben Laurie, listening to Jim Wells there, he talks about trust breaking out, and isn't that really what this is all about? They just need to get back around the table in the executive, Deputy First Minister, and just start working on those bread and butter issues.
Yes, and what I would say, I was rather amused, by the way, Jim, that you forgot my name there, because I forget people's names every 5 seconds. But I haven't on this occasion forgotten your name, and I've been very intrigued to listen to Jim there, because Jim is very much, I think, I'm not misrepresenting you, Jim, to say that you're on the conservative wing of the DUP, which is quite a place to be, because it's not a non-conservative party. So it's very significant that he is speaking so warmly about this, and it's giving me an insight into the fact that there's very big support for this within the DUP. And yes, I think the fact that there's trust, and I think the fact that there's going to be putting a brake on the Irish language to some degree, that there'll have to be some element of buy-in from the two first ministers, is significant. Maybe I can just explain to listeners very briefly why unionists are concerned about the Irish language. Let me give you a random example. I wrote a piece. We a very distinguished and moderate former Ulster Unionist Minister expressed his concern about how in Saintfield, a town outside Belfast, because it's a nationalist-dominated council from the stretches down to Newry, had put the signage first in the Irish language. And when I wrote about this and I said this is a unionist town, I got the most appalling abuse. You bigot, and who's saying it's a unionist town? Well, it's only 70% by the electoral register unionist. And here is this town in a unionist area, let alone what happens in the Western Northern Ireland where unionists are in a minority. It is a unionist town electorally. That's not to say that there aren't lots of people living there who consider themselves lots of different things. And putting signage there in an area where there's no appetite for the Irish language or no significant appetite for it is the kind of thing unionists are concerned about. So that they've got any breaks on this, and we're still assessing the detail, will be something that people are delighted with. But I think that I've already mentioned one of the concerns in this, which from a unionist perspective, which is the ability to collapse the executive. There's another thing that I think your listeners will be interested in, because it's very much the Irish dimension, that's just out the window in this. And it's been out the window in the talks, and it's been abandoned. One of the great significant things from a unionist point of view that David Trimble got was the strands, adherence to the strands. The Tory manifesto said there would be rigorous adherence to the strands. What has actually happened is that it's been made crystal clear that Simon Coveney is as powerful in this process as is the Secretary of State. And that is something you were asking, will the newsletter support this? Well, we'll never support that. We'll never support that. That was a key thing of the Belfast Agreement and a unionist perception that when
where
it fits
do you say where do you say that strand course. That stranding has been encroached or if you like glossed over or merged?
Did you ask me that? Are you saying how has it been?
Yes.
Well, I think there's so many elements to this. The first element to this is, remember Simon Coveney said more than a year ago that there needed to be an Irish language as part of this process. And all the way through, the Irish government acts as a facilitator for nationalists. The myth is that the Tory party, because of the DUP deal, act as a facilitator for unionists. The very opposite is the case. Under no circumstances, at no times, on any core issue, will the British government align itself. It's now even on legacy. It's too complicated to go into this. not aligning itself with unionist concerns on legacy. So first of all, the Irish government is partisan and the British government isn't. People say that this is because the Belfast Agreement commits the British government to being neutral. But the really apparent aspect of this is that the way this was delivered, there's no more a clear illustration of a breaching of the strands than what we do on health. What we do in Northern Ireland on whether or not nurses get paid more, whether or not we put the emphasis on tackling waiting lists, that is an entirely internal strand of Northern Ireland, and the Irish government is, the British government, let me put it the other way, rather than seeming like I'm just attacking the Irish government, the British government has done nothing to send out a signal to unionists that it will observe the strands as it said it would in its document. It's making clear to nationalists, look, Dublin isn't in control of this process as London is. And that's a very worrying signal from London.
Okay, let's go back to Jim Wells on that.
Yeah, I can totally agree with Ben on that. That is one aspect of the agreement that unionists would have grave difficulty with. As we were discussing Strand 1 issues, what should have happened is that the Irish should have stepped aside on issues like health and education, because frankly, as an outside government, albeit one that we have close contacts with, that really, under the Belfast Agreement, was outside their bailiwick. And I think all future negotiations must ensure that that doesn't happen. Because the Irish signed up to that in 1998, and they made it very clear they would not interfere, in the same way that we wouldn't interfere in the health service in the Irish Republic or pay party or anything like that. We would say that's nothing to do with us.
Yeah, but I suppose you'd be glad to see the money coming across the border for, I think, up to €75 million has been committed by the Irish government, Jim Wells, for projects like the A5 running through County Tyrone and other projects as well.
Yes, I mean, obviously the main Monaghan to Londonderry road is a very important artery for both Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, and we've never opposed those cross-border initiatives. But equally, there's going to have to be far more money come forward for the, for instance, the pay parity issue is going to cost the health service at least £100 to £150 million a year. We're going to need £700 million to tackle waiting list and health service reform. So whilst the Irish money is welcome for cross-border projects, this deal is going to have to deliver quite a lot of extra cash to deal with the systemic problems that we face on so many levels within Northern Ireland's various services.
Coming back to you, Alison Morris, columnist with the Irish News, just listening to Jim Wells and Ben Laurie coming at this from a unionist perspective, okay, they have their quibbles, but by and large it looks like this is going to go ahead from the unionist point of view. How do you think there will be difficulty, despite what you said earlier, on the part of Sinn Féin in selling this to their members?
It's not a great deal on Sinn Féin's part. It's not, you know, it's actually arguably maybe worse than what was on the table on February 18. But what it does do is, if you take away those sort of tribal issues, it's a very good deal for public services. And just to go back to what Ben was saying, despite the fact, I mean, with Simon Coveney and Julian Smith standing shoulder to shoulder last night to deliver this, but when it comes to those public services and the health service and education and police, that money comes from the British government. So the Irish government do not have a say. They are not controlling or they're not going to have any say over our public services. The money committed is for infrastructure projects which will benefit people on both sides of the border, and that's fine. And the Good Friday Agreement was jointly signed by both governments, and therefore it was right and proper that they stood side by side and delivered that. I think that Ben has been unnecessarily fearful in relation to that. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden we're going to have the Irish government interfere in the health service in Northern Ireland. That's a nonsense. But
I think from Sinn Féin's point of view,
I think that they will have a hard sell to the hard line elements of their party, but to the rest and to the growing electorate that they're trying to appeal to, this is a good deal in terms of what it's going to do to change the absolute crisis that we have in the middle of our health service. The waiting list since the start of the year, 2020, has been an awful year in terms of mental health and the rise in suicides. Yeah. We're now the highest suicide rate in these islands, while yourselves in the south have managed to have the lowest suicide rate since 1989. Those are the kind of things that people are speaking about, and those are the kind of things that people are concerned about. And I think in terms of that, if this deal is implemented in the way it's been promised, that it'll be a good deal for everyone.
Okay,
and I think that's the important aspect.
Time will tell, perhaps soon enough. My thanks to you all, Alison Morris of the Irish News, Ben Laurie of the Belfast Newsletter, and Jim Wells, DUP MLA for South Down. Thank you all.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.